Good morning and happy Thanksgiving from all of us here at The Takeaway. Today we're playing back some of our favorite conversations from over the year, conversations that often you participated in at thetakeaway.org. One of our favorites, and certainly one of the most impactful, was a conversation about the legacy of Malcolm X that we had in February. And it started an incredible conversation at thetakeaway.org. We talked to Peter Bailey, a former associate editor at Ebony Magazine, an original member of Malcolm X's Organization of African American Unity. And Earl Grant joined the conversation. He was a close friend of Malcolm X's. He told us about how he sees the legacy of Malcolm.
Well, he was primarily concerned about seeing the world the way it actually is, not the way people believe in it. And he stressed all the time that we have to be informed about whatever we're doing. He told us there'd never been an ignorant revolution, and there never would be one. It's always about information.
Which has ended up to being frighteningly accurate. You know, I was not alive during Malcolm X's lifetime. All I know of him is what I've read in books, in my history texts. I'm wondering if you can kind of flesh out his biography for me. I mean, what kind of a person was he?
Well, he was like your vision of a grandfather, very sweet, loving person. He wasn't always this person with his fists clenched and his teeth showing. That's the image that the press presented of him. But there were other images of him they never did try to present.
Peter Bailey, you weren't a close associate of Malcolm X, but you've called him your master teacher. What do you mean by that? What did you learn from him?
He provided me with a perspective on how to view the country and the world. That was his most important thing to me. He also taught me how to use language, how to look at the world. I'm a journalist because of him. He stressed the importance of the gathering and distribution of information. And led me into journalism. I had never even thought about journalism until I got involved with him.
I want to play you a clip from an interview he did with reporter Eleanor Fleischer in the early 1960s, kind of giving us insight into how he framed his ideas.
You think the Negro has first to raise himself to a status of equality with the white community?
Yes.
Now, what happens, assuming that he can do that, would you then be in favor of integration, let's say, in the schools or anyplace else?
When you are equal with another person, the problem of integration doesn't even arise. The only minority in America that's asking for integration is the so-called Negro, primarily because he is inferior, not inherently inferior, but he's economically, socially, politically inferior, and this exists because he has never tried to stand on his own two feet and do something for himself. He has filled the role of a beggar.
Mr. Grant, first of all, the power of hearing his voice is amazing. After 45 years, even longer, this was done in the early 1960s. But he never shied away from these very controversial stances.
You know, one of his favorite statements was, tell it like it is. He lived in a real world at all times. He said, brother, no matter how much time you stand around hallucinating, reality is all around you.
You know, we now celebrate civil rights through Martin Luther King Day, and we actually have a piece of tape from this interview in which Malcolm X was talking about Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King has made the Negro in America unnatural. He has taken away from the Negro his God-given right to defend himself. He has them going through. I looked on the television the other night and saw them beating a Negro unmercifully in Mississippi. And this is the result of a brainwashing technique that a certain power structure in the American government has paid these Negro integrationist leaders to perpetuate among our people.
Such a passionate man. And Peter, I'm wondering, you know, too often now Martin Luther King is seen as the symbol for the entire civil rights movement, but Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were both working toward the same goal in very different ways.
I think you have to understand that during the latter year, during the time that I was involved with Brother Malcolm, he had his relationship with Dr. King had improved considerably, and he respected Dr. King. I don't know if they ever would have been bosom buddies, but I think they had developed a tremendous amount of respect for each other. In fact, in Anthony Summers' book on J. Edgar Hoover, there's a quote by J. Edgar Hoover in which he is speaking to then-Senator Lyndon Johnson, and he says, if we could get those two guys fighting each other to kill one another off. And the two guys he was talking about was Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. So, you know, J. Edgar Hoover recognized that a combination of these two men working together could have caused him some nightmares. And so I think that what he said about Dr. King at that time, because he believed in self-defense, That's what he was really saying. People who I tell people all the time, if you ever find a thing where Brother Malcolm advocated black people going out and shooting people, that's not true. It was always in the context of self-defense, and he believed in that. He believed strongly that people had a right to defend themselves. And if you read Martin Luther King's book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos Our Community, you'll see a different Martin Luther King than the I Have a Dream that he's been reduced to.
They
and
both
I mean
changed.
Reduced to.
Yeah, they both changed.
Yes.
Earl Grant, I'm wondering, do we have, as we look at our textbooks today, are we seeing the civil rights movement through maybe simplistic eyes? We're not seeing all these variations of opinion and debate?
I think you certainly are. What Malcolm was always trying to do was to get us to, if you're born in this country, grew up in this country, how come you don't think like an American? And Americans don't do any of that nonviolent stuff. That's not this country. So how could you have been in this country, learned about Washington, Patrick Henry? They taught me all this stuff in school. And then you come out and stand on the corner and talk about you're nonviolent. Doesn't make sense. That's unnatural.
And that's what he was talking about in that particular clip.
Yeah.
And we have one more clip for you.
He's already separate. The fact that he's a second-class citizen is a political separation. The fact that he's the last hired and the first fired is an economic separation. Only in this form of separation, the black man is exploited.
In the last minute here, Peter Bailey, that separation he's talking about for the black man, it still hasn't been fixed.
Yes, I mean, he was basically saying that separation. Brother Malcolm was a very, very intelligent person, so he would not take positions that were ludicrous. He meant that if you separate yourself to build yourself up, doesn't mean you escape from the world. You know, people, they try to present it as though he was saying we could somehow escape from the world. But he was not. And when you hear him speak, you have to put it in the context of the times, 1955, 1965, the height of the civil rights movement. What happened during that time? Emmett Till was lynched. The little girls were killed in Birmingham. Medgar Evers was assassinated. I mean, that was terrorism in this country at that time. And his speeches and things were responding to rampant, unpunished, and that's the key word, unpunished terrorism.
Peter Bailey, a former associate editor at Ebony Magazine, an original member also of Malcolm X's Organization of African American Unity. We also spoke with Earl Grant, a close associate of Malcolm X's and one of the last people to see him alive. That's one of the conversations we're replaying throughout the year.